B.A. Shapiro has written a page-turning thriller about stolen art and masterful fakes in her debut novel, The Art Forger, using one of the world's most notorious unsolved art crimes as a backdrop. Two robbers in 1990 got away with 13 masterworks from Boston's Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, tying up guards and escaping with works by artists that included Vermeer, Rembrandt, and Degas. More than 20 years later, no arrests, no art. Barbara Shapiro lives in Boston and teaches fiction writing at Northeastern University. It's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
You know, you've been in our region twice, and I've missed you both times, so I'm delighted to talk to you because I read the book in October, and it's been with me ever since. It is it's a wonderful, wonderful novel.
Oh, thank you.
And I congratulate you on it. You were most recently at the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, and for you being a debut novelist, when art institutions invite you, what are they trying to learn? How to keep that from happening to them? What are they looking for?
I think they were really looking for a topic that would interest people who are interested in art.
In the art world,
and, yeah. Indeed, they had a fabulous turnout, and it was a wonderful audience. They even started arguing with each other about forgery, which I thought was great.
How did you get interested in this topic?
Well, I was originally interested in Isabella Stewart Gardner, who is an amazing, amazing woman. She lived in the late 19th and early 20th century, but she lived like a 21st century woman. And so that started it, and then after the heist happened, I got really interested in that, and then I started to get very interested in the contemporary art scene. So I tried to come up with a way that I could write a novel about all of these things, and art forgery turned out to be, you know, the key that unlocked it all.
Let us talk about the actual event that happened in the early morning of March 18th, 1990, when two thieves went into the museum disguised as Boston police officers and made off with these 13 pieces of art, which this fluctuates, but worth around $500 million.
Right.
So what was it about that particular incident that said, okay, I can make a story around that?
Well, I had always loved the museum, and there were one of the pieces, the Vermeer, the concert, was one of my favorite pieces of art in the museum. So it broke my heart, and the idea that somebody might not be taking care of this piece, or that they had destroyed it when Vermeer had so few paintings, just stayed with me. And in Boston, it was and still is a very big story. But I knew I couldn't solve it because it takes me 2 to 3 years to write a novel. And what happens if I solved it and then by the time the book came out, my solution was wrong and something else had happened?
Yeah.
So I wanted to use it as the backdrop of the book and pull it in and come up with my own what-ifs without this is what happened.
So we read about Claire Roth. She is a young Boston artist, and she's had some issues. She was involved in a scandal involving an acclaimed modern painter. Give us a sense about Claire and how you wanted to focus on her in the book. This is Claire's story, ultimately.
Yes, it is Claire's story, and Claire is a struggling artist, but because of the relationship that she had with this other artist who was a married man and her professor, she has become a pariah in the Boston art world, and no one will show her. Nobody's interested in even talking to her or looking at any of her paintings. So she makes her living working for a company called Reproductions.com, where she reproduces masterworks, and then they're sold online as copies, and this is completely legal. And she's very frustrated, and she feels her own work is really good. So in the opening chapter, when the most prominent gallery owner in Boston comes to her studio and says, if you forge a painting for me, I will give you your own show in my gallery, which will catapult her career, she says yes. And that's the beginning of trouble.
The thing I love about the novel is how twisty it is. You're going down the road, and then all of a sudden you take the sudden left and then the sudden right. And that's an awful lot of fun. That's a joyride. So how much of that was planned? How much of that was at the end of the day going, ooh, wouldn't it be fun tomorrow if we make her do this?
Well, I actually am very organized, some people would say compulsive, person, and I need to know that I have a story before I start writing, because I'm kind of cowardly, and if I don't know that it has a beginning, middle, and end, then I get very nervous and can't write. So I had planned out the story, and then, of course, it took its own twists and turns along the way, but pretty much I'm a control freak, and so I was on top of this. But then I rewrote it 20 times, and so it changed a lot, but I need my structure. I need that skeleton to know I can have a body.
What did you learn about forgery in this process of how prevalent it is in the art world?
Well, this blew me away. Basically, they estimate, this was from the New York Times, that 40% of all pieces of art that are put up for sale in any given year, and this includes Sotheby's and Christie's and, you know, high-level auction houses like that, 40% of these paintings are forgeries.
That's an insane number. I mean, obviously, just less than half.
And I didn't believe it. So I talked to artists and gallery owners and museum curators, and not a single one of them said to me, that's absolutely wrong. They all said, that seems a little high, but it's possible.
So what is the answer to that, in the sense of how do we, for works that we are aware of, that we know about, if don't we know that there's more than one? In the sense of that this is either a variation, or I mean, how is that sold? How is that put up? How does a forgery, which the forgery itself can be quite old, right? I mean, they can date back
a long time. They can be quite old. For example, speaking of famous paintings, the Mona Lisa that's hanging in the Louvre, they are not sure that is Da Vinci's. That he might have he had his studio and he had all these other artists working for him, and apparently he did a few and some of the other artists did a few, and they're not sure.
So is that would that be considered a forgery, or would that be considered a sort of a misunderstanding?
Yeah, it's a very fuzzy line. Like, what Claire is doing for reproductions.com is completely legal. But as soon as you try to portray or sell a work of art with someone else's name on it and saying that it belongs to that, it is the work of that person, that makes it a forgery. During the time of the Mona Lisa, this was not uncommon for these masters to have people in their studios who did these pieces, and then the master would sign them. So they can't do any dating on that, because it actually happened, as you said, at that time. And it's
right. Very
hard to actually determine. They check brush strokes. There are a variety of different ways that they attempt to authenticate. But ultimately, in the end, it's not, there's an art in that in and of itself. It isn't an absolute science.
And of course, in that case, it's a fascinating story, and it would be interesting to know, definitively, of course. However, either way, it's still the Mona Lisa, right? It's still a beautiful piece of art.
Well, this is one of the questions in the book. If you have, for example, a Degas that's hung in a museum for 150 years,
right,
and people have walked by it and they love it and they think it's beautiful and have derived pleasure from it, and it's, very valuable, and then it's deemed to be a forgery. It has no value. Was the pleasure that people got from it not real? Is it not a beautiful painting? These are the issues that I raise. I don't answer them.
But. No, you raise them beautifully, and because it really leaves you thinking. And one of the things that you keep on, that I keep on coming up with, and this is when the story broke and also in the novel, is, okay, so two people walk into the museum. They steal these 13 paintings. They're worth over $500 million. What do they do with them?
Well, therein lies the rub. There is not a lot. They can't go out in the street and sell them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there is this almost myth of the collector who sent them in to get these, and now he's in his cave or somewhere with all of the paintings. But it's highly unlikely in this case that that was what happened, because they ripped the paintings out of the frames, and they left some more valuable paintings there, and they took some kind of frivolous things, like the filial off of a Napoleonic flag. And so the other thing that happens to this art is that it is used in the black market as collateral for guns and money, and sometimes, like the IRA used paintings. They essentially kidnap the paintings and then use them to swap for their prisoners. And that's a possibility that's where they are. In that case, it's probably not so terrible, because perhaps they're being taken care of to maintain their value. But nobody knows. They have followed thousands and thousands of leads, the FBI, Interpol, the museum, the Boston police, all kinds of private detectives. And the fact that nothing has shown up is very scary.
Well, the book is endlessly fascinating and so much fun. It is The Art Forger. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. B.A. Shapiro is the author. Barbara, thank you so much. Have a wonderful holiday season and New Year, and I thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. Take care.
I appreciate it. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.